Oscar, where's 1049 Park Avenue?
This is 1049 Park Avenue!
Can two divorced men share an apartment without driving each other crazy?
Hello, and welcome to 1049 Park Avenue, an odd couple podcast. Ted Linhart and Garrett Eisler here. We have yet another interview for you today. This is, I think, our third in a row. Today, we're joined by Marty Nadler. Marty is a TV writer who we were connected to through Heather Randall, who we talked to in our last podcast. And Marty was a big writer, or a very active writer, for Gary Marshall. Worked on Happy Days, worked on Laverne and Shirley, later worked on Love, Sydney, Perfect Strangers, Valerie. And he will tell us his journey from in a little bit of his early days and how he got to also, however, was very active on The Odd Couple. I don't think he has any writing credits on The Odd Couple, but was present there for a significant amount of time. And hopefully we'll be able to share some interesting stories with us. We have not pre-rehearsed any of this. We have not gotten Marty's stories ahead of time to know what to discuss. We're doing this a little bit more wingy, improv-y, which is something I think Marty and I discussed ahead of time would be more fun than hearing all his stories. Garrett and I want to hear his stories first from him and then react to it. So welcome to the podcast, Marty Nadler. Hello.
Hello. How are you, Ted? Hi, Garrett.
Hey.
Thank you for joining
us.
I'm
very pleased to be a part of your podcast.
And you're joining us from Florida, correct?
I am in Florida. It's a beautiful day.
So why don't you tell us, because you gave me a little of this is the only thing you know. Why don't you tell us a little bit of your backstory, how you, where you grew up, how you got into entertainment, your writing, and then kind of how you got to The Odd Couple. And then we'll go and do a deep dive for on what your experience were with The Odd Couple. And so can you give us a little bit of your history?
Yeah, well, I grew up in the Bronx, New York, and I was a latchkey kid. My dad passed away very early, and my mom went to work, so I was stuck watching television in the afternoons after school, and I just fell in love with TV and the comedians on TV. And the actors. So I always wanted to be in show. At 8 years old, Ted and Garrett, I decided I wanted to be in show. And I was in all the school plays. And I was like the class clown. I went to college as a theater major at Ithaca College. And it was at college when I really knew I wanted to do stand-up more than the acting part. So when I graduated Ithaca and went to New York City, I started doing stand-up in the Village and at the Improvisation in New York. And it was in the early 70s. So I started doing comedy with Richard Lewis, Andy Kaufman, Larry David. We all started out together. And being from the Bronx was my connection to Gary Marshall, because Gary Marshall was also from my neighborhood, and his sister Penny Marshall grew up there. So I had an older brother who was married to a woman who was friendly with Penny growing up, and I also remember Penny from the neighborhood. So we were all sort of connected there. And the connection to Gary started at the Improv when Penny was married to Rob Reiner, you know, Meathead from All in the Family. And they would come into New York and come to the Improv with my brother and sister-in-law. They'd see me perform, and they would say to me, you know, we think you're funny, and we would love to help you. If you ever come out to L.A., which I never wanted to do, we'll try to help you, no promises or anything like that. So they would come in, you know, from year to year and see me, and, you know, and the first couple of years. And I finally decided to go out to Los Angeles and take Penny and Rob up on the offer. So I called Penny and I said, I'm thinking of coming out to LA. And she goes, oh, yeah, come out. I'll pick you up at the airport. And you'll stay with Rob and I for a couple of weeks and get settled. And that's what happened. And in the meantime, I wrote a spec script for All in the Family. So I could show it to Rob and he could show it around. And what happened was All in the Family wasn't interested, but Gary was interested. He read the script and he thought I was funny and said, I'm going to hire you to be my personal joke writer. That's why I didn't have any credit on Odd Couple, because when I started, I worked for Gary out of his own company. He paid me $95 a week in 1974. And he said to me, you can come and work, you'll be an apprentice writer, which meant no credit and a little bit of money, but an unbelievable education in television. And Gary was such a wonderful human being that he stuck to his word. He said, I'm going to pay you very little money, but teach you a lot. And then over the years, I'm going to bring you up through the ranks, and you'll be making a lot of money. And
just so you know, Marty, in today's dollars, $95 a week in the mid-70s or 1973 is $668 a week. So still definitely not that much money.
Right, not that much money. And I'll tell you the story. After working for him for 3 months, I went in to ask for a raise because my rent was $125 a month. And I actually spent 16 hours a day at the studio. And a lot of times they fed us, but I spent every penny of that money. And one day I went to Gary and I said, look, I want to talk to you about a raise. He goes, are you getting married? I said, no. I'm not getting married, but I want to buy a lamp. He said to me, well, let me see what I could do. So give me a couple of weeks. So in next 2 weeks, he gave me $300 a week, which was very, very nice.
That's a big
must have been a nice lamp.
I got a nice lamp. Oh, very nice lamp. Very nice lamp. And my job on the Odd Couple, and I don't want to go off the Odd Couple, but just for a second, I had two shows I was working on as Gary's personal writer, a joke writer for Happy Days also. He was just starting Happy Days, which was one. So I would go to both shows, the readings, and there weren't run-throughs for Happy Days. They were filming it like one camera on the lot. But I would go to Gary with my jokes in the script, and he would take the jokes he liked and not take the jokes. And when I was working on Odd Couple, we would have run-throughs where the writers would come and they'd pitch jokes to Gary, but I wasn't allowed to talk. Gary said to me, don't talk. If you have a joke, write it on a piece of paper and give me the joke. And then Gary would pitch the joke. And if the joke worked, he would say that was Marty's joke. And if it didn't work or he didn't like it, he just crumpled it up and throw it on the floor.
Ah, well, that's nice.
Tape on the floor. So how good is that? You know?
Right. That's great.
He wouldn't pitch, if the joke died, he wouldn't go, thanks, Marty. You know, none of that.
Right. And he wouldn't take credit for your joke.
He wouldn't take credit for my joke.
So what season? Happened, go ahead. Keep going.
What season was that?
No. So what? I was going to ask what season you started on The Odd Couple, but I sounded
well. That's
like
what sounds like season 5. I mean, this is bringing up an interesting point to me that I've always been curious about: is that Gary really was these overlapped Happy Days and Odd Couple? Like last season of Odd Couple, Gary must have already been very involved in Happy Days.
Very, very involved in Happy Days.
Yeah.
Very involved. And he was very involved with Odd Couple.
He was so close. Yeah. wow, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. So what year did you start on The Odd Couple? What year? Or not forget season. Do you know?
See, you guys know more about The Odd Couple than
well,
I do.
Well, you said 74. You said 1974.
So is that true?
Like the end of 74, the fall of 74. So I envision myself there as like a season and a half almost.
Right.
You know? Right. 74. I was there 74, 75. So I was there for the end of The Odd Couple.
Right.
I was there season. For the end.
So do you... Yeah. What do you want to start with to share about either episodes you worked on or jokes you did, or there's so many things we want to know. So let's talk go.
I'd rather talk about the process of the show.
Great. Perfect.
And what happens is, so I would show up the first day of work that I came to Paramount and sat in on the table reading. There was me as introduced as the new kid. And then there was Lowell Ganz and Mark Rothman at the time, his partner, and Gary and this guy Frank Buxton and Harvey Miller.
Mm-hmm. We know all those names.
Yeah, and you know, Harvey wrote Private Benjamin. He was a very funny guy. And and then we were augmented during the week by Jerry Belson, who was Gary's partner, who was a hysterical human being. And Jerry would come just on rewrite nights and work with us on the rewrite. So Monday morning, we'd read the script. And then they'd go off to rehearse and we'd start working on next week's script while we're waiting for them to call us for a run through on Wednesday. And if there were any problems, we'd go to the stage and help with dialogue that, you know, they're getting stuck with and stuff like that. But they usually left us alone to a Wednesday run through. And then when we had the run through, which is, you know, a half hour show. It's like a play. We sit in director's chairs and watch the show. And I take notes. I write little jokes on pieces of paper for Gary. And then we all gather on the stage. We never went back to the offices like they do now. We stayed on the stage till like 1 o'clock in the morning. The run through was like at 4 p.m. And we would stay there with Jack and Tony. They would stay for the rewrite. And then, because being on the stage, when we get to a point where, oh, this bit doesn't work, why doesn't work? And they would be on their feet running the new lines, and we'd be able to see. It was wonderful. It was just a very wonderful time. And I did this for, you know, the end of 74, part of 75, but after around 6 months, I was at the table. I wasn't even at the table. I had to sit behind the other writers. So when the food came, I had to eat with the food in my lap. They had the table. So one of the great things was after 6 months, I'm writing a joke on a piece of paper and I start to hand it to Gary, and Jack Klugman grabs the paper out of my hand and he says to Gary, "Let him speak. Let him talk. He's funny. Let him talk." So it was like being Bar Mitzvah. You know, it was like being Bar Mitzvah. It was like I became a man.
Finally got to eat at the table.
I got to eat at the table. I didn't spill stuff. And that was one of the, I mean, there's so many stories. We would order food from this place called Nicodels, a restaurant on Melrose, right outside the studio. And I would order like sandwiches. We couldn't order extravagantly, but we ordered, you know, we ate well, Paramount paid for it. But I would order like a tuna fish sandwich on white bread. And one night, you know, Tony Randall, who's such a health nut, he was so healthy, you know, he was Felix and Oscar was Jack. They were both those guys. And, you know, so my sandwich would be handed to me and Tony would look at it and go, oh, that's nice. White bread, that's bowel cancer, Marty.
Oh, my God.
And I would say, thank you, Tony. It's really going to help my appetite, you know, tonight. But, and we would have such hysterical sessions writing with all these different comedy minds. You know, Gary was unbelievable, and everybody was, and was such an education. And we would have these things happen where, and then you guys could help me with this. Do you remember the episode when Tony had a relative visiting from another country?
No. His brother came from Buffalo, and his grandfather came playing himself. He played.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe this is one of those. Did that episode definitely air, Marty?
Or get produced?
We've encountered some episodes, some scripts that didn't go on the air.
But there is no there's no episode where Tony or Felix had a relative from another country, unless you mean the one where he played his own grandfather, who had a bit of an accent. But this episode
was grandfather from the other country.
Who?
No, he wasn't.
Did your father come from?
No, there's no episode where a visit. There's no episode where they had visitors who stayed overnight, but nobody from another country.
Well, we did have an episode where someone. Maybe it wasn't someone was coming to visit from another country.
Yeah.
Right? So we started figuring out what was the country. But it was a country we made up. We needed a funny name for this small country from this person that was coming to visit Tony. So we all started pitching funny names. You know, and we were crying. These guys were coming up with names, you know, Kakapistan, this and that. And we're laughing and we're pitching. And we realized 2 hours went by.
Just on names.
2 hours because we were small. We were so happy and laughing and into it. And trying to top it each other. And that became a rule after that night when we were pitching jokes and we kept on pitching the same idea for a joke. Gary would finally say, no small country jokes. That became a lexicon in the rewrite. Small country jokes. You know, let's go for 2 seconds and get a joke, you know.
Do you remember the do you remember the country name you ended up using?
I don't. Now, guys. I was 29.
I get it. But you seem to have a good memory.
Well, it could have been that.
I almost forgot this podcast with you today.
I'm going to still ask if you remember stuff because you never know. There's an episode where Gene Simmons plays a princess who comes from Europe.
From Liechtenstein.
But that was before you got there. No. And then there's the soccer player, Zeko.
Oh.
But
Pele. Was that Pele?
No. They had a fake football player who went out with Myrna.
But that was the episode, you know, Marty, do you remember being there for the episode that Rob Reiner appeared in on The Odd Couple as Myrna's fiance?
I think so. That was the 70s and right?
Yeah, that was the season premiere of the season you worked on, although we feel like it may have been filmed at a different time.
I think it was filmed around the fall of 1974.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I was there for that.
And you're right, Ted. And the soccer player comes on, the foreign soccer player comes on in that episode. That's when they're trying to fix Myrna up with other guys.
That's right. So there in that episode, that may be it, Marty. There's a soccer player who dates Myrna, set up with Myrna, and he is from another country. He doesn't speak English.
Okay, so it could be that episode. Now, yeah, and is that where we met Myrna's family?
Yes, that's it. Yes, that's the one with Gary Marshall playing Myrna's brother and Gary Marshall's sister playing
his mother.
Yes.
His mother, Marjorie,
she was in two episodes that were not that episode. She played not a relative. She played a dance teacher and a dancer. Because she was dancer, as I'm sure you know. She was in two episodes, but not that episode.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that was the episode where they were all at the door talking.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yes. I was there. Yes.
Okay. Then I think that's it. That may have been the name of the country. You were trying to think of the country for this character who was dating Myrna.
It was a different actor.
Yes, it was a different. Yeah.
But it was a real football player. I think, Ted, you unearthed that this was a real athlete, a guy.
Oh, it couldn't be. We used a lot of, when I was there, we had football players. We had Howard Cosell. That was a crazy episode.
Tell us about it. Tell us what you remember.
I'll tell you the inside story that I don't think a lot of people knew, and we didn't know it. At the Monday table, we're doing a show with Howard Cosell because Oscar's a sports writer, and it was a nice sports story of Howard Cosell. So we're all gathering Monday morning, and we're waiting for Tony to come. And Tony Randall walks in. He goes, "You're not going to believe this." But he would go to New York on the weekends to be with his wife, his first wife, Florence. And then he'd fly back, Sunday night and be in LA for a whole week. That's another reason why he hung around the table. He had nothing else to do except go back to the Chateau Marmont. So he would hang out, and which was great. I mean, he and Jack added so much to the show. So Tony walks in, he goes, "You're not going to believe this. I went to the opera over the weekend, and I can't even think of her name. You guys may know the opera singer.
Martina Arroyo.
Yeah, I have Martina Arroyo here, and we're going to put her in the show." What? We've got Howard Cosell this week, because Howard Cosell signed the contract with ABC to do the sports, but he also wanted to do sitcom. Mm. So we had to oblige that contract thing by doing a show. And it was a natural thing to do, to put him in, because of Oscar. So we ended up doing a show with Howard Cosell and Gary will talk about, I can't pronounce that name.
Martina Arroyo,
yeah.
So the story that this happened is known, but you having the inside details is not, we haven't heard that before.
I mean, did Tony Randall basically fly her out himself and say, "Here she is"?
Yeah. Wow. It was an already done deal. It was like, and, Gary is such a nice guy. And Gary is always challenged. He goes, "Well, we can make this work. We'll make this work." So this is the kind of stuff. And of course, we went up and we had to rewrite the whole show.
Yeah.
I think they went home and came back to, we would have the scripts delivered to their house at night, the rewrite. Mm. So they could come in with new scripts, And the idea of the rewrites were you rewrite it a lot on Monday and Tuesday, and then less and less because, they can't learn whole new scripts on Friday. So, We would change jokes all the time up until the actual filming of the show, and also in pickups. If we can think of a better joke during a pickup, you guys know what a pickup shot is, which is...
Why don't you explain?
In other words, when the audience leaves and we're still doing stuff that they thought they could do better or didn't work that well with the audience, that's when they would use the canned laughter. But we had recorded laughter. We had microphones over the audience. We try to have as many legitimate laughs in that show as possible. We didn't like doing the canned laughter.
Right.
On the Howard Cosell episode, was that process of rewriting that script more chaotic than the rest of the scripts you work on, or are they all so 1 a.m. last minute, let's make everything better, that the chaos of bringing in a guest star at the last minute didn't seem any different?
Well, that was a very unusual chaotic scene. That was, you know, chaotic week. It's usually pretty good. And a lot of times we would read two scripts. We would read that week's script and the script for next week, because then we can get a jump on making that script better. We can get the network notes, the actors' notes, the studio's notes. Everybody, you know, it was a collaborative effort.
And would you be on set during the filming, like during the live filming with the audience there? Do you ever be there to punch up something that maybe just wasn't working with the audience and you'd go reshoot it or do something?
Absolutely. Yeah. I also did the warm-up for the show.
Oh. Oh, here's the question. You know, in the episode with Howard Cosell. You were the warm-up guy. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, Gary was the main warm-up guy, but he loved that I was around because of my Gary hired me because of my stand-up ability, which gave him big jokes, because I was writing jokes for my stand-up. So I was a New Yorker, and the Odd Couple was a New York show. So he wanted to bring that sensibility to the show for me. And also, I helped him with the warm-up. He would do the warm-up before I got there. And then now I was helping him so he could concentrate more on the directing, the shows, and stuff like that. So I would talk to the audience, but I learned from Gary the different things to cover, the set funny stuff we would do to the audience and stuff like that. The other thing we would do, and this is like, you know, this is all new to me. My eyes would open up to this whole new world. Gary would throw candy to the audience. And I said to myself in the beginning, what a nice guy. What a generous guy. He would give candy to them. And it didn't dawn on me till like 4 months later, he confessed to me. He goes, Marty, they're there for 2 hours. I'm doing this for sugar. Yeah, it's amazing. It was amazing. And another funny joke, did you know about Tony and Jack's agent, Abby Greshler?
Yes, we've talked about Abby Greshler. But you tell us, you know more than we do, of course, so please.
Well, I just know the candy story. He was originally Tony's agent. And then Jack hired him because Tony's contract was 10 pages and Jack's was 2 pages when he first started the show. So Abby became Jack's agent. He got Jack's better deals, but Abby Greshler was their agent. And sometimes Tony and Jack would go over to Abby's house to just have a meeting or talk. And at Abby's house, there'd be a candy dish and there'd be candy from the show in the dish. And Abby would go underneath the stands and pick up the candy and drop. That was hilarious. And when we shared stuff like that, and the guy and the rewrites were so funny, where, you know, Eleanor Donoghue, you know, there was an issue about giving Felix a girlfriend.
Tell us about the issue. Please elaborate on that.
Well, when they tested the show, they thought that Tony was a homosexual. Yeah. Not Tony, right. Felix.
Right.
Yeah. Not right. Tony, Felix.
Yes.
Because he was a little feminine, you know, actor. They just wanted, they were worried. And I guess it came out through the test. You know, they would have a test audience. Somewhere on Sunset Boulevard, they would test these pilots and shows. So they wanted to give him a girlfriend. So in the beginning, Gary didn't go for that. He just said, no. This is a show about two bachelors living together. okay? But they eventually did get Eleanor Donoghue to become his regular girlfriend. So one night, we're doing a rewrite, and the show is over 8 minutes long, which is very long. You know, it's easy to edit 3 minutes out of the show, 4 minutes, but 8 minutes is a long time. And when we sat there and discussed the show, it really meant that the scene with Eleanor could easily be taken out of the show that week. And to show you what kind of people we all were, Gary was at the rewrite table. It's 8 o'clock at night, and we realized that maybe Eleanor shouldn't be in it. And Gary said to us, "Oh, but it's Christmas. I don't want to cut her out. She's probably shopping for presents and stuff like that. I don't want to leave a message, you know, on the machine. I'm sorry, don't come in, you know, tomorrow for the, you know, final rehearsal. I just don't want to do it. And there's a silence about a half a minute, and then Jerry Belson goes, "I'll call her." Because Jerry was so sick and so funny. And that was Jerry's character. That's his humor. And we didn't call her, and they did cut something of the show. I'm not sure if she was left in or not. And it wasn't because of the money. Eleanor Donoghue was married to a very, very, very wealthy television producer.
Yeah, we interviewed her son recently. Her son has written a book about Eleanor and her father, and we interviewed him. So, yes, we're familiar with he produced Bewitched. Yes.
Yeah, some guy Ackerman she was married
to. Yes, Harry Ackerman.
Harry Ackerman.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, we had some great things happen during those rewrite sessions and during the filming of Odd Couple. One of the greatest things that happened for me is we go down for a Wednesday run through. Now it's a closed set. No one's allowed to be on the set during the week. Friday, the audience come. So we go down to watch a run through, and there's two people sitting in the bleachers in the back, in the dark. And we just looked and we said, who could that be? We thought it could have been the network. It could have been the studio execs. So we just sit there and watch the run through, and it's funny, but we hear these two people laughing, big laughs. And we figured it can't be the network. They never laugh. it can't be the studio execs. They're always writing notes that, you know, cut this scene, is too expensive, whatever it is. At the end of the run through, Tony Randall comes out and says to us, would you guys like to meet John Lennon and his son, Julian? They're big fans of the show. And they came to watch today because Friday, everyone would be watching them. So we all line up and go up the bleachers past them. And I take John Lennon's hand and I say, what can I say? You know, thanks for the music. He goes, well, thanks for the laughs.
Yes, that's so we've heard, we knew that happened, and we asked Eleanor Donoghue's son about it, who talked about her mother's memories. But you're the first person we talked to, and maybe one of the fewer people left around who was there for that day. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It was such an honor and such a great perk. You know, I got to meet a lot of stars just by working at the Paramount lot, you know.
Yeah.
And working on the show. I mean, you have the Did Odd Couple.
Right.
Yes.
Were you there for that one?
Yes, I was. Uh-huh. He'd show up in a robe and two bunnies were with him.
I'm just placing your on the timeline now. I can see that was the one for the bunny. with the flashback where Gloria's a Playboy model.
Yeah.
And Hefner has a cameo at the end, right? So that's like the end of season four, right? So yeah, that is that must have been, yeah, we can see when you were there.
Now, yeah, the last season, I believe, you guys got to help me, you're younger than I am. The last episode was Felix getting remarried, no? Yeah,
yes, that was a question next. Wait,
before your question, Ted.
Okay.
Before we get to that, because that was the last episode that aired, that was the final episode that aired as the finale of the series, but the Howard Cosell episode you mentioned with Martino Arroyo, my research shows that that might have been the last one taped. Do you remember that? And that maybe that was why there Tony Randall fought to get one more guest star in. Does that ring a bell to you?
No, I don't remember it being the last one.
Okay. It seems like they were aired out of order. They weren't necessarily aired in the order that they taped.
That could be possible.
Right.
That could be possible. But the one with the marriage, I think we shot two endings where he didn't get married.
That's what I want to ask you about. We've been trying to figure out and try to find scripts. What do you know about that alternate ending? Is there anything you can share with us that you remember?
Well, I can share fragments of my memory with you.
That's better than nothing.
I think, thank you. I think one reason they shot it both ways is if the show was going to go on.
Right.
So just in case they still wanted to do these two guys living together.
And as far as
the other way would be to end it where he's back with his wife. And the reason I think they did it that way is, you know, to digress a little bit, we're not really digressing because I'm talking to you guys about the life of the Odd Couple. You know, ABC never really had faith in the show.
Yes, we do know that. We do know it was the head of the network who really championed it.
Yeah, Goldenson.
So according to Heather and according to what we read, it wasn't Leonard Goldenson. It was, we talked about his name last time. I think it's actually Martin Starger is the ABC.
Yes.
He was the one who Tony said to Heather, and maybe you remember this. He was the one who said, who just liked the show and kept renewing it, even though the ratings were never great. Well, I'm sure Leonard Goldenson. Yep.
Yeah, but let me give you some backstory on this. The reason the ratings were never great was because ABC wasn't great. If you looked at the list of the top shows, the third of the top shows was CBS Network. Mm-hmm. And then the other second third was NBC Network. And then number 50 was The Odd Couple, which was the first show of ABC's. Okay?
Yep.
So ABC wasn't a very popular network. It wasn't one of the top networks. So Odd Couple suffered by being on that network. And right before I came on, maybe it was the third season, the way it works out there is Paramount makes the show. They pay for the show. Then they sell the show to ABC. And ABC pays money to Paramount and makes money by doing commercials. Okay?
Yep.
Well, when ABC said to Paramount, we may not pick up Odd Couple this year, they said, well, okay, because CBS is very interested in it. What? Yeah, that's okay. We'll just go to CBS. And they wouldn't let that happen because it would be a total embarrassment that show become a hit show on CBS. So they kept it on ABC.
Oh, that I've never heard before. That's fascinating.
Yes, that's what happened. And the thing is, the reason it became a hit to everybody was, as you guys know, when it went to syndication.
Exactly.
At 11 o'clock. So the truth of the matter is, if you let the show be seen, people are going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it got buried. And ABC would change the time slot, change the day sometimes. So that, you know, there's a lot to go into a reason why a television show is a hit or not.
Exactly.
But the quality of the show was fantastic. I mean, and that's because we were journeymen. We would stay until the show was as funny as it could be. And Gary would take a joke. If someone in the audience had a better joke, we would take that joke. There was no egos involved. The idea was to make the show the best as possible.
And it clearly paid off that way.
Yeah.
Before I want to ask you about some other guest stars and see if that sparks any memories. Before we get there, do you recall, though, that they did film both endings of the finale with him leaving and not going back to Gloria? Not, were they both filmed or just both written?
I think we were both filmed.
It's a shame that if that's true, that that alternate ending has never surfaced anywhere. That would be like Paramount's put out the DVDs 3 times. And I wonder if they even know the people at Paramount today, because I bet that exists somewhere.
It's got to be in a vault somewhere or some editor's house. You know?
Yeah, Ted, what if it's sitting in the Paramount vault like Raiders of the Lost Ark?
I bet it is. If it really was filmed, I bet it's there somewhere. So I don't get it. All right. So Marty, did you have a specific another story you wanted to go to, or should I kind of mention some of the other guest stars and see what that sparks with you? What would you prefer?
No. Go mention some stars.
Okay.
If a story pops into my mind, like the John Lennon story, I'll fit it in somewhere.
Okay. There's Monty Hall, who was on the show twice.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about working with Monty Hall?
No. No,
that may have been before you got there. I'm trying to do later episodes. Leonard Barr,
yeah.
Leonard Barr, the stand-up comedian, was on the bowling episode that was in season 5. And I didn't know if you knew Leonard Barr because he was a stand-up comic.
Leonard Barr was Dean Martin's uncle.
That's right. Right. We know that. Yeah. We've talked about that.
Yeah. I think I was there about Leonard Barr. And, yeah, I mean, he was funny. I mean, the thing is that Jack and Tony were so generous and so nice to the actors, the guest actors. I mean, what you just said, Leonard Barr, a picture of Jack laughing, you know, on the set, where probably Leonard said something where he just cracked Jack up.
But you didn't do any, you weren't. He obviously was older than you, so you never, your stand-up circles obviously never meshed because he's just in a different era, I assume.
No. My stand-up circle, like I said, was Robert Klein, Richard Lewis, Andy Kaufman, all those guys, Freddie Prinze. We all started together in New York.
So in that Howard Cosell episode, there is a joke writer who comes in, played by Jack Carter, to give Felix jokes.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. When I think of, I was like, well, that sounds like what Marty Nadler does, because Jack Carter just comes in, starts spewing jokes for Felix to use against Howard Cosell, and Felix hires him to help Oscar. But that seems like, I wonder if they ever could have used you, or if you remember that was kind of inspired by you, but it sounds like you don't remember that happened.
Yeah, you know, you got to understand, at that time, I wasn't inspiring people. I was trying to stay out of the way.
Okay, that's fair enough. All right, so there's the Hollywood Story episode where Bob Hope appears. Now, that was filmed on location, I think, by Bob Hope's Real House. Do you remember anything about that?
I wasn't there for that, but the only thing I can tell you as an inside story is that Probably they did that because Gary lived across the street from Marvel.
Oh, I didn't know that. Garrett, did you know that? No, we did not. We didn't know that.
No.
In Toluca Lake. Yep. Sometimes it's nice to just get up and put your clothes on and go work, you know, step on outside and go to work.
Well, that's like Tony Randall when he lived in the
San Remo.
They used the San Remo to film what they pretended was 1049 Park Avenue, but they used Tony's actual apartment building in New York. So it's kind of the same philosophy.
Yeah. Right.
Pernell Roberts was in the episode where they do the country dance. I don't know if you remember anything.
I remember. I think Roy Orb was Roy
Clark. Yes, Roy Clark was in an episode. Yes. He played Oscar's pal.
I was there for that.
Do you remember anything about anything about that episode? Or
no?
Okay. All right. Keep going, Paul.
I remember.
Keep going. You remember?
I remember. Murray the cop's nose through the door.
Yes, that's one of our favorite gags. Yes.
Oh my God. I'm telling you. You know, and that's something that probably happens. I can't tell you who came up with it, but that's something that probably happened during the rewrite. We were on the set and Murray comes to the door and someone who has a fantastic comedy mind, like Gary or Jerry Belson, is what if he puts his nose through the door? Through the piece.
Are you saying it was definitely not you? Could it have been you?
No. I'm saying that idea probably came up that night at the rewrite.
Right. But it could have been your idea. Idea? Oh, definitely not. Okay. Yeah, we love that gag.
Listen. If it was my joke, I would tell you it was my joke.
Good.
I'd
okay.
be happy about it.
Great.
It wasn't my joke, but it was to be there and have that happen and see that happen. It's, you know, fantastic. I mean, Murray wasn't there, but waiting for the next day to have him do it.
Ah, interesting.
It wasn't in the script on Monday is what I'm saying.
Right. That's great.
That's the kind of stuff. The magic of you know, and working for Gary on shows like The Odd Couple were just so fulfilling and rich. And then when I would go later on in my career, when sometimes I would leave a show and go to another show with another producer and see. All these guys just wanted to do was go home and have a cocktail. They just didn't want to stay and make the show better. And it was not fun.
It sounds like the Gary Marshall experience, it's hard to top. There's no way to do a better job than that.
It was impossible to top. Impossible.
Well, I guess that you're fortunate that you got to spend so much time on his shows.
Well, I worked on his movies too later on. I mean, I worked for Gary for 42 years, sometimes on and off.
So just so everyone knows, we're going to do two episodes with Marty. We're focusing on The Odd Couple now, and then we're going to schedule another episode for later where he's going to go into his later career, talk about the movies, talk about Left Sydney you worked on. So we're going to hear all about that, but we decided to focus the first hour on The Odd Couple. Okay, a couple other guest stars to mention. There's a full episode with Paul Williams.
Yes, Paul Williams. Was that during my time? I think it was.
It was. It was season five, yes.
Yes. Yes.
There are fans. And, yeah, please. What do you remember? Anything you remember about that one?
No, the unfortunate thing is again, I don't want to skip out of The Odd Couple, but I got very close with Paul Williams when he was working on the music for the Happy Days musical later on, years later.
Happy Days.
And I was walking up I was walking up 7th Avenue in the 80s, and Paul Williams was walking towards me, and we talked, you know, and hello, how are you? And then I start walking, and some guy comes up to me and goes, was that him? Was that him? Was that Paul Williams? I said, yeah, he's hard not to recognize. I mean, it's either him or Munchkin from the Wizard of Oz. You know, no, but I don't remember well, tell me a little bit about the episode. Maybe you'll wake my cobweb mind.
So Edna, what? Felix's daughter, goes and runs off to kind of travel with Paul Williams as Paul Williams goes from gig to gig. Edna's now like 15 and is in love with Paul Williams. She gets to meet Paul Williams. Oscar, for some reason, it's a little silly, you know, he goes on Paul Williams' plane and flies with him. So Paul Williams comes back to the house. Edna is like transfixed, meets him, and then decides to follow him around the country. And Felix and Oscar have to go basically get her back and bring her home because Paul Williams, like, you know, I don't want to control her. I don't want to be the man, but, you know, the government, and tell her he has to leave. But, you know, I don't think it's best that she probably follows me around. It's an episode that fans are a little bit divided on. There's some who love it and some who don't like it. I think we're in the middle.
Well, yeah. Well, you got to understand, we did 26 shows a season. So they're not all going to be great. But out of the 26, a lot of them were pretty damn good.
So one of the reasons we love the show and we talk about... Now, first of all, let's get this out of the way. Have you ever watched season one? I do not like season one at all. Tony didn't like season one, according to Heather. Garrett's a little tolerant, and there are people who love season one. I assume you've seen the season one episodes that are very different. They're single camera on a different set, and they have all laugh track. Are you familiar with that distinction?
Well, I'm familiar with that distinction, but I wasn't around for season one, and you got to understand, as doing stand-up in New York, you're not home watching television.
Have you watched the show recent? Like in the past 20, 30 years, have you sat down and watched The Odd Couple?
No, I haven't.
That's interesting.
I haven't.
And I'm curious, why?
Well, because of my lifestyle.
You're not a big TV guy, not a big TV watcher?
I wasn't a big TV watcher, especially when I was a TV writer.
Right.
Now I'll give you an example. I'm watching Seinfeld now for the first time.
Oh, wow.
But I'm enjoying it. But when, and I knew Larry David from the improv days.
Right, you mentioned that. Wow.
Right.
And I'm a Martha's Vineyard guy. Okay? So Larry came to Martha's Vineyard this first time to visit with his wife for 2 weeks. And everybody was talking to him about Seinfeld. I had nothing to say. I didn't know anything about it. And I started getting paranoid, going, Jesus, did he like the show or something? But, you know, and I never had a chance to talk to Larry about this. But so, yeah, I was busy going out at night doing stand-up. I wasn't home watching television.
Well, my point was, season one aside, one of the reasons we love the show, Garrett and I, and the reason we did a podcast was there are very few clunker episodes in the seasons 2 through 5. You were saying you did 26, and we just, you know, not everyone can be a gem, but you think your hit rate was pretty good. We would agree that, you know, I think out of maybe, you know, the 80 episodes that we focus on in season 2 through 5, or 20 or 90 episodes, I could probably think of less than 10 that I wouldn't, like, I would turn off if they were on. That is pretty remarkable. There are a few, All in the Family, I think, has a success rate like that. Seinfeld does. It's very few TV shows where I think the general fandom agrees that there's, like, most of the episodes are really watchable.
Right, and that has to do with everything clicking as far as casting and the writing.
Yep. Right.
You know, if you have great cast and great writing, you that's it. It shows. It shows. Did you guys like the Subway show?
We did. Yes.
Subway show. Yes. Tell us about that.
Well, just the only thing I can remember is I just loved the set. You know, they would go to New York. Jack and Tony would go to New York for 2 weeks before every season to do outtakes.
Right.
To do New York shooting.
Right, right.
So they had to know a little bit about what the episodes were before they even started the season, so they can cover that in New York. But we did the show out in Hollywood with the Subway in Hollywood, you know, on the set. And I just thought, that's the other thing. I mean, I think we had a guy who I always see his name on Columbo for a set design, Bill Ross, his name will come up. And I think Bill Ross was a set designer for The Odd Couple. And back then, remember going to school and you had dioramas? Remember what a diorama was?
Of course, yes.
Well, they made dioramas of the sets, little models that they would bring over and show the writers and show Jack and Tony. I mean, everything was done before Hollywood became corporate, basically, in 1992. That's when I left. And before it became corporate, it wasn't about the budget of the show necessarily. It was, how do we get the best show? And do you remember the time when Jack and Tony did a fantasy thing about them getting older?
They
were in an old age home?
No.
Well, there's an episode called Old Flames Never Die where they start feeling that they're too old, and then Tony Felix tries to get them to be young again. Maybe that's what you're referring to, or the cruise ship with the old people too.
There's no fantasy sequence where they're in an old age home. That doesn't happen. That was never filmed. That was not. There's the only episode in old makeup was when Tony Randall played his own Felix's grandfather comes.
They're their fathers. Chicago. It's
yes,
a flashback to the Chicago 1920s.
Well, but that's not
easy.
Is that what you mean? When they go back and they each play their own fathers in the 20s, but not an old age home as old people. I don't think that's the same thing. This sounds like a gag that was written, but maybe never filmed.
Well, I think. Well, maybe I'm mixing up two different stories, but the point I was trying to make is about the budget. There were a lot of times, and this is where I thought there were times when I thought this was a show that it was about Jack and Tony thinking about getting older and what's going to happen to them. And I thought that we had a set in an old age home. And when we wrote the show and we got a note from Paramount, from the executive side, saying there's no money in the budget for that set. Let them reminisce about being old in their living room.
That's what happened. Yeah that's what happened. Right.
Right.
So they did that.
They did. They never had the old age set, but there's an episode where they feel like they're getting old. Oscar's secretary, this is after Penny Marshall left. Oscar's secretary takes them to a disco club. They meet up with some people, and then they realize that they're trying to pretend they're young doesn't work, and they go home.
But I think the scene that Marty's referring to is early in the episode when they're sitting at home. Felix has got the glasses on, reading the newspaper, reading the obituaries. And they're having tea, and then Murray comes over and tells, you know, gets really fed up with them and tells them to, you know, to
shape
get
up
with it.
Yeah.
Shape up. Yeah.
So that did happen. That, yes.
I could see how that would have been a funny idea to have. I mean, you said a fantasy sequence, like a dream sequence, right? In a nursing home, was that what you were saying?
Yes, but this doesn't help my story.
Oh, sorry.
It defeats my
it was cut for budget. It was cut for budget.
Yeah, that makes sense. But that's not the story
I thought I would. Listen. Let's just get this out, because I was going to use that as an example, but if you actually said it was done in the living room, then it's juxtaposed to the point I was trying to make with what Gary would do. And Gary, you know, Gary had 4 or 5 shows on at a time in Paramount. So when he would get a note saying, his one of the producers would go to him and say, they just called from the executive office, they're not going to approve that set. He would say, all right, we'll tell them to build the set. I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it.
Wow.
Because there were times he would do that. So then the phone would ring on the other end going, you know, and some junior executive would pick it up and go, oh, Gary's going to pay for it. And he'd run into the executive office and say, Gary Moss is going to pay for it. So we don't have to. And they go, what? What are you talking about? We can't let Gary pay for it, because Gary's contract is coming up and he's going to remember that we didn't pay for these things, and he's going to go to Universal or he's going to go to Warner's. So a lot of times we won the argument. But I guess in this case, he didn't. It was done in the living room.
I think that's true. Yeah. But the subway story, I remember the audience applauding when we started to see the subway move, because they were, and it still works today. I mean, we watched these episodes hundreds of times.
You think you're in New York.
Yeah. It's a really impressive job how they make you believe that Felix and Oscar are riding the subway. And by the way, in that episode is Barney Martin, who is Jerry's father on Seinfeld. He's one of the subway people in that episode. Gary Marshall is in that episode. Yep. He plays, you know, a very curmudgeonly subway writer.
Yes, I remember. I was there, yeah.
Do you remember Scatman Crothers being there? He was also on the train.
I don't, but I worked on Chico with Scatman.
Oh.
But I don't remember. I don't remember that.
Okay, so the episode with Oscar and Felix playing their own fathers in the Roaring Twenties, that had Elijah Cook Jr. was the guest star there. I'm just riffing on the guest stars. But what I want to get to actually is there's an episode where Oscar, this is in your time, where Oscar almost marries a woman, and the woman is played by Dina Merle. And I'm wondering if that...
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. I remember what you just said. I don't have any details.
Okay. All right. Then another episode that we love from this season is Two on the Isle, where Felix is tricked by Oscar into writing theater reviews for Oscar's paper. And they ended up getting real theater critics. First of all, Neil Simon is in the episode. He has a cameo. And then
I wasn't around.
That may have been, yeah, Ted, that was one of the ones that was filmed sort of like late in season 4, even though it didn't air.
Oh, and it later. was in New York, clearly.
Well, some of it was.
Okay, yeah. So then you may not remember that show. There's an episode called The Rent Strike with Rodney Allen Rippey coming.
And Victor Bono was the guest star as the landlord.
Right, and Rodney Allen Rippey.
The Rent Strike sounds familiar. Was that... The 70s?
Yeah, that was the 5th season. That was one of the last episodes to air.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I mean, that I thought of that when you were talking about Eleanor Donahue's scene maybe being cut, because that is a very complicated, long plot, very involved plot, and she has it's one of her last scenes in the series. She's very active in that.
Yeah. But it was so interesting to be a fly on the wall, which I wasn't. I was actually an actual writer there. But to see things go on, like one little anecdote I could give you is the craft service guy. You know what craft service is on the set?
Yes, it's the food that everyone gets to eat.
It's the food that's not really the catering is different. And, today in TV they have TV and films, they have caterers, but they also have craft service people. In addition to the catering, to the meals you get while you're on the set filming, and nowadays it's all healthy stuff. But on the Odd Couple days, it was coffee and donuts, basically. And the craft service guy was also Jack's bookmaker. Okay?
Yeah.
So Jack was a big gambler. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
So whenever this guy would go up to Jack during the rehearsals and whisper in his ear, we pray to God that he won. Because he would not be in the greatest mood, for the next couple of hours. That was always, so I'm saying there was always these drama things going on within the drama, within the show. It was great. It was just great. And it just showed you he was Oscar. Mm-hmm, Jack was Oscar. Jack was Oscar. Tony was Felix in real life. And that's what added to the greatness of the acting and the shows.
Did you ever see any conflict between them on the set?
I'm sure there was. I can't think of any individual instances, but I'm sure when you have two strong actors, two talented actors like that, they're going to come up against stuff. One of the greatest things I learned as a writer came from Jack. We'll talk about, he gave us conflict sometimes as an actor where we wanted him to wear. There was some episode where he put a funny party hat on.
Yeah.
And he looked so silly and it was hysterical. But when we first had the script and he read in the script, he said, why would I put this on? And we said to him, it's just funny. He goes, no, it's got to be real. I won't put it on. I'm not going to put it on unless you find a real reason to put it on. As an actor, I need to have a reason. And then if it's real, I'll believe it and the audience will believe it. And that was true. And I guess we found some motivation for him, thank God, because he looked so funny. But these are the kind of things you learn as a writer when you work with really good actors and good people. Helps you.
Are there any other little moments like the nose thing, any other bits like that that stand out that you recall? Because you did just bring that up, out of the blue. And we love that. And any other little bits like that that come to your mind all these years later?
Well, was there the only other thing that could have happened? And again, there was a story with Edna and a frog.
Yes, it wasn't Edna, it was Leonard and the frog, yes.
Leonard?
Yep.
Leonard the frog?
Yes.
No, his son, Felix's son.
Yes, Felix's son Leonard has a frog that Oscar lets escape, and then they have to go find it down, find another one.
Did Oscar try to put it in the blender?
Yes. There's a moment in time where they think it's in the blender. I think they figured out
that, but Felix gives the frog to give the frog jacuzzi bath.
Yes.
Well, that happened during the rewrite. I remember them coming up with that at the rewrite table.
Ah, interesting.
Those are the things, where we end up crying from laughter, where our ribs are hurting us. You know?
So actually, we're going to, so our favorite all-time Odd Couple guest star, recurring guest star, is in that episode. So do you have any, get to know Richard Stahl at all?
Oh, yes. Richard Stahl, they loved Richard.
We do,
he
too.
He was hilarious.
Yes.
A little short, balding guy, right?
He was taller, but balding. Yes, he was a tall, tallish guy.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he wasn't as tall as he looked on TV.
Correct. But yes, you're right. Balding guy. That's correct. That's him.
Well, yeah. That's the kind of thing where what happened is we're reading a script on Monday, and you got to understand a lot of those characters were not cast.
Yeah.
Yet. Mm-hmm. Like the director would read the character's part in the reading. So after we read the script and sit around, Tony and Jack, we got to get Dick Stahl for that. See if Dick Stahl is available.
Well, that's interesting.
And there was always another guy. When I tell you this guy, he really is a famous character actor. But he's a little guy.
John Fiedler.
John Fiedler.
Yep.
Another favorite. See, they had a stable of actors that they kept using. And that would be another thing where they'd say, see if John Fiedler's available. You know?
Yeah.
And they'd call the casting office. And yeah, because they were what we would call on the money. They were on the money. They would get the laughs. They were good actors. So when you have pros like Jack and Tony, they want to be with pros. They want to be with pros.
Yeah.
They
had to, like, on a moment's notice, come in and learn that script and do it, basically.
Well, now in moments, no, they would come in. Yeah, they would come in during the week. They'd have less time, but yeah, but that was that. That's the business.
Yeah, right.
You know, you get a call, and are you available? What time is it, guys?
Yes. So our
hour is up.
I was about to say this is. I was about to actually wrap it up because we've done an hour, so we're perfect. So we want to thank you for sharing your reminiscence here, and we will contact you to talk again. We hope
for part two.
Audience enjoyed this inside look at The Odd Couple, which is hard to do these days. Not too many people to find. We're so lucky that you were so young and working on the show at the time because it's tough to find people. There are still some writers, of course, out there, but we really appreciate your time. Marty, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, I wish I had the 29-year-old memory.
You still gave us some great insights, which I think our fans will.
Yeah, I think we had a good time, and you brought back some good memories for me. Listen, I look forward to another podcast with you guys.
Great, thank you so much, Mark. I'll be in touch.